everyone, and thank you for tuning in to One Song Number 9 with my one and only sister, Heather Woods Broderick. Heather and I have played in many bands and ensembles and groups together over the years, and when I was a teenager, she sort of took me by the hand. She was 4 years older and kind of led me into the world of music in Portland, Oregon, and played in my first band with her when I was 16 years old, started doing shows, and so we have a long history of sharing music together, and it was great to catch up with her and talk about this song, Wyoming. Enjoy.
What is a song? Where do songs come from? What is the life of a song?
How much can a song morph and change before it becomes something else entirely?
What is the essence of one song?
It's my very own sister, Heather Woods Broderick.
Oh, I'm embarrassed. I don't have a equal retort to say thank you for having me. And
this podcast is over.
Hi, Peter.
No, it's only just begun. Hello, Heather.
Hi.
Well, we already kind of said hello. You know, it's interesting doing these podcasts because I wasn't sure at first, should I start recording straight away so that I don't do, you know, an initial hello and then another hello that's like a fake hello once the thing starts.
Yeah.
But I realized that I kind of have to check in first just to make sure the connection's all right and stuff. So most of the time there are two hellos, and we already said hello, so here's the fake hello.
I won't
ask you how you're doing because I just asked you that, but I will ask you my three awesome questions, which are where in the world are you now? How many years have you been on this earth? Where in the world are you now? And what was the last meal that you ate? And what would you like to tell me about that?
Okay. I have been on this earth for 38 years and change. Mm-hmm. I'm in Venice Beach, California, in my little studio, back house studio room here. It's a beautiful sunny day outside. The wind's rustling in the palm trees. There's road construction happening all around my house. So if you hear that, let me know. But and let's see what I. Oh, this morning I had a cup of black coffee. Mm-hmm. I always like to have my warm beverage before I eat anything.
Nice.
And I've been really into this new smoothie lately.
Oh,
that's very, it's when I looked at it, I was like, this is not something that I'm going to want to have on a regular basis, but I thought I'd give it a try. And I love it. It's, avocado, cucumber, lime.
Whoa.
And black pepper.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. And some water.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds very refreshing.
It is very refreshing. I'm not like a huge, I've never been a huge cucumber fan, but when they're not pickled, but They're it's really delicious and refreshing. So
that's what I had. I've been working on this organic farm recently, and they're harvesting all the cucumbers right now. And cucumber is one of the favorite foods of Sean, my 10-year-old stepson.
Oh, perfect.
I brought home a cucumber yesterday that was no joke, like this big, like 2 feet long. And, you know, like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 inches around. Giant, giant cucumber. So imagine trying to turn that into a pickle.
Are they like zucchinis when they get that big? Like, do they taste less delicious when they've overgrown like that?
I didn't taste it yet. I'll have to, I assume the flavor's not as good because otherwise they would have been trying to sell it, but they brought it into the staff room to give it away saying, you know, this thing is past its prime. But I just thought it was such a spectacle that I had to bring it home to the biggest cucumber fan enthusiast that I know.
Yeah. Was he like, whoa?
Yeah. He was pretty impressed.
That's cute.
Well, that smoothie sounds interesting.
Yeah. You should give it a try. I was pleasantly surprised.
I like this. I go through phases with the smoothies. Recently I've been making smoothies with, and I only recently learned how to pronounce this word because I work with some Brazilians now. Acai. It's A-C-A-I.
Mm-hmm.
Acai, which is a berry that grows in the Amazon and in Brazil. But yeah, I've been putting that into smoothies, which is really nice.
That's a big antioxidant berry.
Exactly.
Right?
It's meant to be very, very good for you.
Yeah. It's a big hit here in Los Angeles, California, and all the smoothie bars. And
right. And they do the bowls with them. Yeah. Acai bowls. What do people call it down there? How do they pronounce it?
I think they say acai, you know. I mean, I remember when I was first seeing that come up on menus and stuff, people would be like, acai?
Acai, yeah. That's what I used to hear in Portland.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be a acai bowl place.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah. Well, that sounds delicious.
Absolutely. Well, we are here to talk about your song, Wyoming. And I thanks for doing this song. There are a couple specific reasons why I asked you if we could talk about this song. Wait, did I ask you or did you ask me?
You asked me.
I asked you if we could do this one. We had a few different ideas of what song we could do. And, you know, hopefully this won't be the last time we do this because you and I have kind of a gold mine, depending on your perspective. But from my perspective, a gold mine of archival recordings and different collaborations we've done together since the time we were teenagers and stuff.
I mean, so, you've helped me so much on my own records, but I also, when I was looking for the demo of this song, I'm on the studio computer that has a backlog of other things that we've done over the years. And there's, I came across some good ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we'll get into some of those in a future episode, hopefully. But yeah, Wyoming is from an album. When did the album Glider come out? 2016? 2015?
2015, yeah.
2015. I'm going to hold up the cover here for anybody who's watching. And for anybody who's not watching, you see a kind of a sunset happening in the background. And a very interesting looking lady in the front wearing a white fluffy coat and a pink scarf dangling down. And she's got some sort of biscuit or cookie in her hand. And she has a great smile and a little crown on her face, on her head. And this is a very special picture, this cover image to Heather and I. Maybe you could tell people what the deal is with this picture and what you went and did with it.
Okay. So the woman on the cover is our grandmother, our father's mother.
Mimi.
Donna Louise Pratt is her maiden name. But Donna Broderick, Donna B.
Donna B.
Donna B. Yeah, she's a real character. And it looks like she's really dressed up in that picture, but actually the only thing out of the ordinary in her outfit is the feather boa and the tiara that she's wearing on her head. So she's, you know, she's
tiara. She's really, that's the proper terminology. I called it a crown. I don't know the terminology for these things, but thank you for.
Well, she is a bit of a queen, so we can say crown. this was on her 80th birthday. The whole family got together, extended family. And I think her daughter, Kathy, did most of the work setting up this dinner, all those table settings, very, very nicely put together dinner for the family to celebrate. And we had meals and people got up and read things or told stories about her. You performed a poem, spoken word poem.
That's right.
Rap song.
Donna B ain't no wannabe.
Yeah. And we, a lot of the people in our family are musicians, actually, like not just our immediate family, but extended. So, and Mimi loves music. So, we played some music. It was a really nice gathering, and you could tell how happy she was to have everyone together. Like, you can really see that in her face in the photo, I think.
And
you took that photo with a disposable camera.
I had a disposable camera there, and just you talking about it now, it makes me realize that, you know, because family gatherings can go so horribly wrong, you know, like they could, you know, oftentimes you might be excited to see your family and get together, and then you get together with them and you just cannot wait to leave, you know. I mean, I don't personally have that much horrible experience, but that's the sort of classic story you hear about, you know, of family gatherings just turning into like a big nightmare.
Oh, did you hear what Aunt Barb said?
Yeah, but that night
was an
exceptionally civilized sort of gathering of our family. And you're just making me realize that now, how rare that is, like a family gathering. And I think it speaks to Mimi's character, you know. She's a lovely woman who kind of cultivates a lot of positivity around her, I think. And people showed their best face that night for her, I think, you know.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
But what did you then go and do when you had this crazy idea when you decided to start use that photo for the cover? You had this crazy idea to do something with it. Can you
explain? Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to choose a record cover.
Yeah.
And, for me, it was with this collection, it was really tough. Like, I think I had a few options of different photos and ideas that I might want to pursue for the cover. But there's always this conversation that comes up when you're putting a record out. I don't know if it's the same for you, but like as a female singer songwriter, the label or people that are having some input in the production of the record, they always really want they wanted my face on the cover.
Right. Right.
Or a picture of me
there's definitely an industry trend to try and, you know, if it's a female to show her face and her body, and you know, that is a huge trend for sure. I think it's fair to say that that more so than the males, the record company has more of a desire to put a female on the cover. I've definitely heard a lot of that experience from female musicians that I know of.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I went on to put the next record, Invitation, I put out. There's a photograph of myself on the cover, but it just didn't feel like something I was interested in doing for this collection of songs. And it wasn't interesting to me. And I wanted it to be something that I wanted to look at and that I found interesting and stuff. So basically what ended up happening was I really wanted this as the cover, and the label liked that idea, but I sort of came to a bit of a compromise and thought, well, what about if I put a picture of myself on the back?
Right. The album. Right.
And so, right.
Okay. So that's how it started.
Yeah. And so I had the idea to, because, you know, our grandmother is someone that she's a really special person to me. And to me, she's like one of a kind and someone that I look up to in a lot of ways. And I really admire the way she has, just like moved through her life, dealt with hardships, aged gracefully, like how she's continued to surround herself with positivity and stuff. So that was like something I was thinking I would aspire, you know, to be. And we're very different in our characters. She's this pastel, you know, very smiley, manicure, makeup.
Yeah, and just very quite outgoing, you know. She'd be
a real lady. And I'm much more introverted and things. So anyway, as a tribute to her, I thought, what if I go back to California where we set up that dinner and I sort of restage that whole party scene and put myself in the photo in her clothes and so that's what I did. I rented all the same party furniture from the
it's company. Unbelievable.
I tried to get flower arrangements that looked as close as I could get. And just sort of like put myself in that frame.
And I think the original idea was to like really recreate the pose and the whole photo, you know, but of course, while you were there with a photographer, you took lots of photos, and the one you ended up using, which, as you just said, you know, your character is very different from Mimi's, and that's kind of reflected in the photo that you chose, because you're not staring at the camera with a big smile on your face. You know, you've got your head down to the side, but look, everything else is there.
Yeah.
And,
and there were lots of photos where I was, you know, trying to get the position of a cookie just right. And with a big smile and, you know, I actually was having a very good time when we did that photo shoot. Our aunt Kathy was there and she was making me laugh so hard that it wasn't like I was fake smiling or anything, but it almost felt like if I was doing exactly what Mimi was doing, that it almost felt a bit like mocking her or something.
Sure.
So in the end, the other photo seemed to feel like more of a tribute and less, less like,
do you still have those, the whole photo session on a hard drive somewhere?
Yeah.
Do you think after the fact you could try and find me the photo that's as close to that one as possible, just so that we could show people and maybe put the two side by side for a moment?
Oh yeah,
definitely. Okay, that would be awesome, and I'll put that in right about here. I'll just put that in for a minute so people can actually see the recreation side by side, because I always wanted to see that somehow. I understood your choices for putting the other photo on the back, the one that's a bit different, but there's something about that matching the symmetry and all that that is very satisfying, gratifying to me. So I'd love for that moment, that thing to have its moment briefly here, if you're up for that.
But also part of the reason I feel like maybe we didn't end up using the one that was exactly like it was because, of course, it was a different year and a different time, and there's no way that the picture would look exactly the same.
Yeah.
And you know, you took it with a disposable camera, and we actually did take some with a disposable camera,
right,
just to see like how close we could get. But you know, there's a very particular light in the background and everything. So yeah,
I see. So after realizing that there's no way it's gonna look like a real recreation, you know, it's never going to look quite right. So let's embrace that and go with the best photo of the session that we like.
That
makes sense. And also, just to round out our grandmother's involvement on this album that includes the song Wyoming, all the writing on this album, she wrote that all out by hand, didn't she?
She did, yeah. And she also made that little heart at the bottom. I asked her if she could draw some little, just doodles that she might make in her notebook, or she makes a lot of, marks in her Bible as she's reading scriptures. And I asked her if she could, you know, just do some of those and send them as well. And I picked the heart in the end.
And like I definitely brought this up in conversation with somebody recently. I think it was on one of these podcasts about how her handwriting is like, it's such a thing of beauty. It's like real patient art, but it's, for me anyway, has always been difficult to decipher. It's almost as if I would imagine actually it may have been easier to decipher at the time where she learned to write like that. Maybe people were more used to reading like joined up cursive handwriting like that. But nowadays we're used to seeing like clear typeface and, you know, so to see someone's like really personal handwriting like that, I've always found that interesting about that.
Yeah, I think it looks really nice as a from a design standpoint to have that on there. Because if you're not even reading it, just the way that it looks and the embellishments and stuff is really pretty to me.
So the song Wyoming, where should we start with it? In talking about songs, there's many different angles you can approach. You know, you can approach the sonic instrumentation of a song, how it's sort of technically built, where and how it was recorded, and then there's of course with lyrical songs, there's the content and what the song is about. And I don't know, because I know you personally so well, because you're my sister, I don't know how interested you are in getting into the content of the song, but maybe there's specific lines that, I wonder, are there any specific lines that, you know, don't you ever write a lyric and think that I know what that means, but I wonder if anybody else knows what that means. Like when you say, I'm a house and you're Wyoming, you know, do you care to elaborate any of that?
Well, I think if you put it within the context of the song, or what the song is about, which is, you know, essentially just like a moody, shoegazy song about unrequited love. You know, I wrote the song while I was on tour. And basically, you know, when you're driving around looking out the window, or at least for me, like, you know, I start thinking of a lot of ideas, looking at what's around me and seeing reflections of thoughts I'm having or things I've experienced being represented in the landscape or in nature, or, you know, like it's all out there already. This is what that thought looks like in Wyoming, you know.
That's the amazing synchronicity of life, that sometimes your thoughts, just like whatever thought you're having, you look out at an image and it all ties in together and you see it represented there in front of you. That's amazing.
It happens time and time again for me. Like, I think that connection just gets stronger and stronger as time goes on for me. But for that particular song, like, you know, it's all about this friendship that just, like, never quite, like, we always just missed each other, you know, on, like, we were both there, we both recognized these feelings and stuff, but the timing was just never quite right, or someone had something else going on in their personal relationships, or, you know, all the reasons that things don't work out. But so I was driving through Wyoming, probably thinking about this situation or something. And there was literally this house that was just like in the middle of nowhere. There was no road to get to it. And, you know, Wyoming is this beautiful, absolutely stunning landscape, but it's very barren. There's, you know, there's not a lot of people that live in certain parts of that state. So to me, it was just a representation of, like, we're both here. This, you know, I'm the house, you're the state.
Right.
Like, we're both in the same place, but, like, there's a piece of it that's unreachable, you know, like there's no road to get to the house where I am. There's too much space around, to really figure it out.
Yeah.
I guess. Does that make sense?
Desolation. I Googled earlier rural Wyoming. I'd like to show you what I found, 'cause I'm curious if any of these, images sort of match up with what you were seeing out the window. Let me see here. So we have this. Like, just the most barren landscape you can imagine.
It's so beautiful, right? Look at that.
So beautiful. Look at that. You know, though there's a road to reach that one. But, I mean, there's nothing around it. There's some more... Just in case anybody's not aware, because I don't know who's tuning into these things and where they're based, but some people might have not even know what Wyoming is, if they've never been to the what we call the USA. And so I've got a little map here, and it's always good to refresh my own geography, because I never remember where exactly things are, especially in the USA, where it's such a huge piece of land. And, you know, it's been a good 20 years since I had to memorize in school which states are next to each other and what the capitals are and all that. So there's Wyoming in between, above Utah and Colorado, on the right to the east of it. It's got Nebraska and South Dakota to the north, Montana and to the west, Idaho.
Yeah,
very, very desolate landscape out there. So
yeah, it's the kind of place you can drive through and like you're worried you're going to run out of gas because there's just like nothing for miles and miles.
So you wrote this song on tour, you say?
Or at least parts of the lyrics. I can't even remember at this point. But yeah.
So you sent me a demo, which is amazing. Like when people still have demos, it just, I don't know how interesting it is for non-musicians, but I find it immensely fascinating to sort of just hear the process of how a song was sort of birthed and what happened to it in between then and when it kind of got recorded for the so-called album version. And then also how it changes on stage and all that. But what I was really struck by, I think we'll save the demo to listen to. I think it's a nice way to end, but I just wanted to say, I was really struck by on the demo, the pieces that are there already fully formed that made it onto the record, such as the guitar has this heavy delay sound, like an echo repeat sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you might think, well, maybe the song was written on acoustic guitar without any effects, but it kind of seems like that effect was built into the song from the very start, no?
Yeah, actually, it's funny that you say that because I was living in New York at the time when I wrote that song. And when I first started writing music, it was much more just like acoustic instruments, piano or guitar. And then like as time went on, you and I played in bands where people were using pedals and different effects on things. And my world started to be opened up to all the possibilities. And when I moved to New York, I had some very basic pedals, one of which was a delay. And it just was like the most exciting thing for me to like be able to use that as a tool to shape whatever it was I was working on. I mean, sometimes just having that bit of feedback or something that just opens up a lot of ideas for the composition, I think.
And I want to, pardon me if I'm getting too basic here, but I really want these conversations to be accessible to people who aren't necessarily musicians who know all the terms. So sometimes I wonder, like, does a term delay mean anything? Because that word out of the context of music is like, oh, you're delayed. It's like you arrived late or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But when we say delay, it's like, it's the effect that I use when we first started this conversation. It's delay.
Delay. Delay. Delay. Delay.
Yeah.
That's delay. So,
which is actually more like an echo and repeat something.
It's basically just a repeating echo sort of thing. But yes, for whatever reason, that has the name delay in music.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's delaying. It's
the end of the sound. End of the sound has been delayed.
What is it doing? And also for people that are listening, like as someone who's playing with these effects and stuff, you can choose how much of it you want, you know? So like when you say the delay on Wyoming was really heavy, like, you know, I had turned the knobs on my equipment to make that delay sound very noticeable, and the repeats were, you know, maybe, I don't know how many, like, but I could have chose that it had one repeat,
right?
But it probably had more like 10 or something. Yeah.
So it turns into a really washy kind of sound.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting to try and think about these things from not knowing what they are? Because you get so used to them, like anything else, you just, once you get into it, you forget the perspective of having never known what a delay is, or, you know.
Yeah, it makes me have a lot of respect for all the people that are making these YouTube tutorial videos describing how yeah. to do something in the computer, or describing what things are, which I watch a lot of.
Yeah. Well, I've wondered many times, like, how different it must be to perceive a concert if you have no, like, sort of knowledge of the technical side of music, you know? Because in my brain, if I'm watching to someone and I see their foot go down and hit a pedal, and all of a sudden there's delay on the sound, it's like I make a conscious note of what just happened there. But, like, if you don't have any idea how that stuff happens, it must all just seem like complete magic. Or just, I don't know, just, or you just, you don't even think about it technically. It's like, it's just the feeling of it all.
But, wow, that person's voice is really magical. Like, it just sounds like this reverb cherub angel when they start singing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. There's always the people at the end of a concert that, like, come up to the stage and they want to see your pedal chain, or taking pictures of what pedals you're using or something. But yeah, I guess a lot of people don't even care, or don't think about it, you know?
Yeah. And I should say as well that as much as I do, you know, I wouldn't consider myself a master with technical stuff, but, you know, over the years you can't help but learn a lot. But as much as I sort of have learned in that department, I think for myself and probably you and most musicians we know, it's still the feeling of it that is the most important part. You know, it's gotta feel right. It's not about, like, ooh, does this delay hit the right frequency to impact the, you know, it's.
Yeah. It's not like a engineering. It's, yeah, it's, for me, it's the same. It's it starts to lose feeling and interest for me, unfortunately, the more I learn about it, and the more I start thinking about, you know, should this pedal go before this one or after this one? How, you know, it's like, I just want it to feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you created this song, and the delay was kind of integral part of the song from the very start. And at least that's what it sounds like from the demo. And also in the demo, there's a few other elements that kind of got recreated exactly on the studio recording, which are, there's these little kind of blocks of vocal harmonies. They, to me, they sound like almost like a train whistle or something, like these little chords of the voice built up.
Yeah, I'm a real junkie for harmonies.
Yeah.
Blocks of harmonies.
Yeah. And I think there's even some main vocal harmonies of yours that are in this recording, the demo recording, that made it into the final one.
Okay. Yeah. I tend to sort of like figure a lot of things out in my demoing process. Usually there's a lot of stuff carried over from the demo ideas into the actual recording.
Well, what do you think makes more sense, to listen first to the demo or to listen to the studio version and then come back to the demo at the end?
I guess the studio version, since there's probably not necessarily everyone that is listening to this might not have, people might not have heard the studio version. So yeah, we could start that one.
Okay, let's do that. Well, I thought maybe it's a good idea to play the music video, because there was a music video for this song.
Okay,
Is there anything you want to say about the music video?
Well, yes, it was. I love this music video. It was directed by a really dear friend of mine, Jeff Rolls, out of He lives in Portland, Oregon. And yeah, it was all filmed on Super 16 film, except for one little snippet of it, which was intentional. It was filmed on the Oregon coast, which is sort of an interesting juxtaposition for a song about Wyoming.
Is
a state without any ocean. But that's where I lived, and it's more about I think the feeling is like very correctly portrayed in the video, like lots of open space, fairly desolate, lots of stormy, moody weather, all of that. So yeah, I guess that's
okay. Yeah, let's check it out here. I haven't seen this in a while, so I'm actually very excited to watch this now. That's still one of my favorite tunes of yours, sis.
Oh, thanks. I remembered when I was watching it that the other reason it kind of makes sense in a way to have that video shot there is because the story where I'm saying like got in your car and drove west, that yeah. literally took place in Oregon, like going to the coast. So
right.
I felt kind of like full circle to bring it back there.
Yeah. Oh, what I've found doing these conversations is that I think someone's probably measured this in some way, but like, it's such a different part of your body and your system that like converses with people than like listens to music. So yeah. oftentimes the transition from having a conversation to then listening to a song that really moves you is like, and then going back into a conversation, I have to wake up now after being transported somewhere, yeah. pull myself back to Earth.
That's a nice thing to be able to travel somewhere with a song, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also because you're my sister and I was quite involved in that record, making of that album, it feels nostalgic for me as well, you know?
Yeah, I have a lot of memories of like you in throughout the process, whether it was like sending, you know, I've always sent you demos of stuff I'm working on and sending you demos. And then of course you were involved in the studio recording of that track, part of which we did live as a three-piece band.
Yeah, in a studio.
In a studio.
In a different Portland. Studio in Portland. Yeah. Uh-huh. Type Foundry. Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Loved that place.
Yeah.
And then we took it out to the studio that you had set up on the coast. To do lots of overdubs. And I remember you were so great during that whole process because, I second guess, especially at that point in my life, I was a lot younger and I was just sort of like figuring out my voice and you know, figuring out how I wanted my voice to sit in the music and things sure. like that. And and I'm kind of just a bit shy by mm-hmm. nature, and you were encouraging with like, yeah, I think you could even sing that part a little bit louder. You know?
Okay. And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And making it grow, like you'll hear in the people that are listening will hear in the demo. It all the ideas were there, but it didn't grow to this sort of like rock song at the end of the demo, and you made drums on that, which elevated it to the next level. And I remember working on like making the feedback for the end of the song with the guitar. I was like, I don't know how to make feedback.
Yeah, that was fun. It felt like we were like tuning into a bit of like Nirvana action. Like it probably doesn't sound anything like that, but for you and I, coming from our like classical and folk music backgrounds, to be sitting in a studio together just recording feedback like made me feel really rock and roll.
Yeah. Oh, it feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah. To like it's great.
Make loud.
And music. And that feedback at the end there, it kind of hangs on that guitar feedback. And I just think it sounds beautiful. Several different tones of feedback kind of bouncing off each other.
Yeah.
It's awesome. But, you know, I think that whole, the dynamic arc of that song maybe, you know, I might have helped get it there, but it was definitely your idea. Like you wanted that song to be quite like heavy.
Yeah, and it wasn't until way later that I ever tried to play it on an acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. Like, probably for some sort of session or something.
Right.
But it felt like very strange to play it as this like soft song.
Did that work?
I think after some time passed, like I could play it now, you know, and just sing it a little different, not be belting it out at the end there. And yeah, yeah. It feels nice now.
I would have been curious to hear that because I'm very curious about how much can you change them and they still work? You know, a song like that was written on although it was written on the guitar, it was written with this delay effect. So does it even work on an acoustic guitar without the delay? Or is the delay actually like one of the integral elements of the song itself? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about the delay on that song is that the delay is timed. The delay hits with my strums.
Yes.
So in the absence of the delay, you still get that sort of like propulsion forward.
Right. I see what you mean. Because it's a chug, 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 strummy, strummy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the jug, 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 strummy, strummy.
That's the technical term, yeah.
For those who don't know what that is, no. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and yeah, it's worth noting as well that delay not only was very prominently used in that song and on the guitar, but on that whole album, like when I listen to that album now, I hear a wash of delay. And I think that's primarily because, well, for one, you were discovering delay on your guitar, so you were using it a lot. But I had just got this tape delay, old Roland Chorus Echo tape delay unit in my little studio out there, which I was using on everything. Every single, no joke, every single instrument that got recorded for those songs ran through that tape delay to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, and then I would take the final mix and run that through the tape delay and like, wow, that was a nice little horn out there.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
But yeah, so it's a very delay heavy song and album.
It is. Yeah. But I think that it landed right where I wanted it to, and right where it was supposed to, with all those effects and it's a lot of fun making that.
Yeah. Well, I have a little thing to jog your memory a little bit here. So I was talking about how there's an element in that song that you had also done in the demo, which in the studio recording is not mixed so loud. I think people will hear more what I'm talking about when we listen to the demo, but it's what I described as a train whistle sound, like these blocks of chords. And in the album version, it's both with your voice, but also trumpet by David Allred.
That's right.
And now, do you remember when we were recording that David and I got all giddy in the studio and we had all these ideas for other trumpet parts? And at the end, I was like, David and I sat in the studio for like 2 hours and I was like, Heather, let me work on this with David. And we like, David was blowing his brains out on the trumpet, like reaching for these notes that are so high it could make your face explode. And we were layering up these trumpets and it was becoming more and more epic. And finally I brought you in and you were like, oh no, that's way too much. Do you remember?
I do. I had completely forgotten about that though. I mean, what David played was incredible. And, you know, as a different version of the song or on its own or something,
Well,
it was amazing.
Funny you should mention that, because David and I were so happy with what he had done that when I was later helping him record his album, we took those trumpets from your song and made them a song of his own.
Oh, yeah. Well, I must have heard that. But
you did.
I don't...
And I'm going to play it for you now to jog your memory, because I always wanted somebody to know this dirty little secret.
Okay.
This track on David Allred's album is really a reject from your song Wyoming, but it was a reject we were so happy with and had spent so much time on that we had to use for something. So,
okay, awesome.
And also, when David and I were going to, David needed a title for this piece of his because it was no longer part of the song Wyoming. So what we did is we looked at town names of Wyoming, and we thought that would be a good idea to, because it, you know, it was supposed to be a part of Wyoming, right? So he found a town from Wyoming with a population of like 200 called Chugwater.
That's
and
right.
David at the time, I don't know what he's drinking now, but at that time he would only drink water. You'd offer him a cup of tea or a coffee or a beer or a glass of wine. No, I'll have a glass of water, thank you. So it became kind of a gag with me and David that all he would drink was water. And then he finds a town in Wyoming called Chugwater.
See, it's all out there already. The universe figured it out.
That's right. It was all meant to be. And so let's listen to Chugwater, Wyoming. Or just, no, it's just Chugwater real quick.
Okay.
Here it is. Okay. So you heard that. Now, when you said, agreed to talk about this song with me, I thought maybe I should go back and see if I can actually put that together with the song Wyoming and show people what it was meant to be and what is the thing that got rejected. So are you up for hearing that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I mixed in, and I mean, David will be thrilled. I don't know if he'll be as thrilled as me, because I think those trumpets were more my idea than his idea, but
they're very high.
I, for one, am thrilled that this moment, this thing is finally getting its moment. So I mixed in the trumpets very loudly here for dramatic effect, so you can hear what they were meant to do in the song.
Check
this out. There you have it.
Wow. Big reveal.
Just one of Peter Broderick's many failed arrangement attempts.
It sounds amazing. It's just...
It wasn't right for the song.
Well, yeah, it kind of takes it out of this, like, dirgy feeling thing into more of like a... like a big reveal, you know, like leading up to this moment and then finally at the end. And
it's too triumphant sounding. I think it's like
triumphant.
It's like the sound of like bringing a flag and staking it down in land and saying, this is mine now, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not the vibe of the song at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, great trumpet player though. Whew.
Absolutely.
Can't yes. believe he hit all those notes.
I know. Yeah, so that's Wyoming and that's Chugwater. Is there any other details of the song that you want to hone in on before we listen to the demo and say goodbye to people? Maybe we could get, like, who's the other personnel that was in the studio when we recorded it live?
So the trio was you and Dave Depper, is a extremely talented multi-instrumentalist musical genius brain that we played in some bands with, like folkier bands when we were younger. But he's an amazing bass player and he can play everything.
Yeah.
So he came in and played bass on the record, which was fun to set that trio and do that stuff. And Adam Seltzer was engineering that day.
Yeah.
I think for that song, that was it, right?
That's it. I think so. Yeah. For some reason I was thinking there's more involved, but I think there's more different guests throughout the whole album, but you're right. That song is just yourself, me and Dave, and then David playing some trumpet as well.
Yeah.
Later on.
Yeah. It was a pretty small group of people involved in that record, really, because I mean, you and I sort of dabble with playing lots of different things, and actually we know a lot of musicians that can play lots of different things. So you don't need a separate musician for each thing, I guess.
Yeah. And so, what we did is we recorded those basic tracks, you know, your stuff, drums and bass live and at Type Foundry. And then we took it all out to the coast and did all the overdubs and the mixing. And I'm pretty sure the mixing process was remote. You were off doing something else, maybe on a tour or back in New York, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing because I have this very vivid memory of mixing that album because it poured snow out on the Oregon coast.
Oh, wow.
Usually the snow doesn't really reach it out there. It'll snow like up in a bit higher elevation. But that week that I was working on mixing that album, the entire coast was just covered in a blanket of white. And I actually couldn't even really leave. So I was just like snowed in the studio working on these mixes and then emailing them to you and getting your notes and all that.
Beautiful. Yeah. That's a sight when that happens out there.
Yeah. Have you seen it like that? Did you see it snow out there?
I've seen it snow. It didn't stick around for too long, but yeah.
Yeah. So you got this, you sent me this demo. What do you remember anything about when and where you were, when it was that you made the demo?
Yeah, I do. I was living in an apartment in Greenpoint in Brooklyn. I had a roommate at the time who was never there. So a lot of times when I was there between tours, I would just sort of set up on the floor in my room with my laptop and record demos into... I might have been using Logic then, but it might have even been GarageBand. Mm-hmm. I probably recorded into like a 57. I think I just had an SM57 microphone that mm-hmm. I sort of just used for everything that I was demoing. And I remember sitting on my floor, like with my guitar, playing that into the computer and singing it. And I remember feeling kind of self-conscious about the song after I wrote it, because it was just so obviously to me, so obviously a love song about unrequited love. And
okay. It made you feel vulnerable or something.
And so I wasn't quite sure, like, if it was just like a little bit too on the nose or something, but it felt good. And, I kept working with it, and then everybody else seemed to think it was one that we should pursue as well. So,
yeah. That's so interesting, isn't it? Like that process of writing a song, and you know you feel one way about it, but your feelings always change as you start to share it with people. Like, I will literally make a song and then I'll send it to somebody, and the moment I send it to somebody, I'll listen to it again imagining what they're going to think when they hear it, and it completely changes my perspective of the song.
Well, that might be a helpful thing in some ways, I guess, depending.
Yeah. And then you get the actual feedback of what they thought of the song. And then, you know, it just,
yeah,
to me, it just goes to show that the songs are never just ours. As the writers of the songs, you know, you're the one who channels the thing and it comes through, but the song is so much bigger than that, I think.
Yeah. And I think as you, the more songs you write and the more you familiarize yourself or hone in on your process of writing music, and I don't know, for me, at this point in my life and songwriting trajectory, I try to just like not overthink it that much. And a lot of times the first, you know, it's like how people say, like, just go with your gut, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of times the first rendition or the first thing that comes out might be the truest, you know, best option to go with. So, yeah, and it's just one song in a world of songs. So who cares?
Right. You just gave me a plug for the podcast, Heather. It's just one song, isn't it?
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Heather. Thanks for telling us about your one song.
Well, thanks for having me, Peter.
And we'll sign off with this gorgeous demo version. I mean, you could release an album of demos one day. I feel like some people demos are like, they really are just a demo and it really is about the final version, but you're just so thorough with everything that, like, of course, when you do a demo, even that's going to sound, you know, great. So that's my little opinion of what my sister done. Okay. Check this out, people. Thanks for tuning in.
When I think about my day,
breath.